Hello, I'm John Kelly, and this is a podcast of Mystery Train. For rights reasons, the music is shorter than in the original programme. Mystery Train hits the rails Sunday to Thursday at 7 p.m. on RTE Lyric FM. You know, people often talk about the first time they heard the Beatles or the first time they heard Elvis Presley, but I'll tell you, I'll never forget the first time I heard that. Farewell to Erin from the Buffy Band, from the album Old Hag, You Have Killed Me. This is Mystery Train, Sunday night special, where we get someone in to pick the tunes. And tonight, I'm delighted to say, from the Buffy Band and many other things besides, which we'll discuss as the night goes on, Trine and the Gonal. Trine, it's great to have you here.
Great to be here, John.
I've always wanted you on this programme now to pick the tunes. Because I know they'll be good. So, first of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Keeping busy?
Just had a hard time nailing down, 14 of my favourites. Probably be more like 40.
Yeah, it can't have been easy. Apart from just what you're known for, I mean, the public side of your musical life, you've also had this, another side of your musical life throughout many years now of running clubs and, playing with different people. It's not just the records, there's a lot more besides. So music is totally your life, really, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And was it always like that? When did that begin?
I suppose it began, after I'd finished in UCD. Just did an arts degree, and I knew I wasn't going to. I wanted an escape hatch.
Yeah.
And our father, God love him, used to say to both Micheál and I when we'd come down at weekends to Kells, I could make a phone call and we could, you could get a real job or go back and do the HDIP and but thankfully he did get to hear us, himself and Mammy, with the Buffy Band in the stadium before he was gone from us all too young in 1977.
Now, you're talking about Kells there, but your dad was from Donegal and your mother was from Sligo, I think. Is that right?
Well, she was born in Gortsheen, yeah.
Right.
But lived most of her life in Dublin, and equally daddy... his people moved from the Ranafast Gaeltacht down to Gibbstown, Ballyhib in County Meath. And soon after they married, he got a job in the vocational school, in the tech in Kells. Mm. And he taught there for 17 years. So Donegal was our summer home every summer.
Right.
It was like going to the moon and going to paradise. And... we were very lucky. That we had that. So, I suppose from those days, from those summers in our teenage years before our career in music started. Like we were still at school, Myra and I, when we did Scarab Ray, that recording.
What age were you when you moved to Kells?
Yeah, we were born in Dublin. What age? About three or four.
First
day at school, I was three and a half, and I remember that, and I hadn't a word of English.
Yeah, that's what I was going to... Have I got this wrong in that? I think talking to Myra once, it wasn't just that your parents had the language, but it was actually a kind of a Gaeltacht itself in Meath, is that right?
Oh, yeah, there were... absolutely, yeah. People got these... land grants. It was an attempt to bring together people from the various Gaeltachts like Connemara, Kerry, Donegal, and they were given small plot of land. And it was, post the war years. And you
hadn't a word of English when you went to school then?
Not the first day. I remember as well, daddy dropping me off and being surrounded by nuns and being carried from class to class to sing. Shandun and all, put up standing on.
Wow.
You
don't forget those things, do you?
No.
Listen, your first choice tonight, Trina, is the McGarrigle Sisters. And I suspect over the years you would have run into the McGarrigles in various places, would you?
Never did.
No.
But I can still see the first LPs and Our brother Eamon was great at saving up for singles and LPs and, you know, sitting on the floor in the sitting room and playing them, and we loved them instantly. But no, I never did get to meet them.
And the one you've chosen, talk to me of Mendocino.
Gorgeous spot. I remember driving up to there to see the redwoods and thinking of this song. I just love the orchestration in it and the song.
Talk to me of Mendocino there. McGarrigle's the first choice tonight of Trina Ní Gonal, who's with me in studio, I'm delighted to say. And Trina, we're just talking there about, you know, the background, the Donegal background and so on, but then living in Meath, in this Gaeltacht area in Meath. The sort of house you were living in, Trina, with so much rooted in Gaeltacht areas and in the language and in the music and so on, were other forms of music verboten? Obviously not if you're listening to the McGarrigles.
Well, that was a good bit later. No, Daddy relented eventually, you know, but he didn't particularly. If he came in and saw Mick Jagger particularly on the telly, there'd be a bit of an uproar. But bit by bit, you know, our brother Eamon playing away and hearing from the sitting room, all these different records, you know, he eventually acknowledged that, you know, it was just, it was all music. And what he listened to himself, like, what he loved with recordings of the Glenn Miller Band, he loved Ella Fitzgerald, Satchmo.
Yeah.
We listened to Bing Crosby. Equally, you know, Joan Baez, when Dylan came along, Mammy loved and sang just like, not unlike Jeanette MacDonald,
right.
Nelson Eddy, every time that came on. Nina Simone, John McCormack, Billie Holiday.
That's very healthy,
you
isn't
know,
it?
And then Micheál and I studying piano, a few Beethoven or Bach records came in. I remember I had a harpsichord record by Couperin. So there was a mad mix. This was before kind of our teenage years, and then started getting into Pentangle, Steelhouse Band, The Beatles, Clapton, Crosby, Stills, Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
But there'd be the odd different one coming in then, like the McDonald Sisters, you know, singing in Scots Gaelic, or a series, the music from the Western Isles of Scotland. And next thing it might be, you know, the Allman Brothers, Fleetwood Mac, or
it's quite a mix. But we need to, I mean, in terms of talking about your professional career as a musician, that did start early because, I mean, Scarra Brae was very early on. And were you still at school?
We were still at school. You know, the records, the LP came out about a year afterwards. And by that time, Myrith went into nursing. I followed suit to Micheál and Dahi, who were in UCD. They were doing Celtic studies and I went to UCD. And in those college years, I started, you know, there were clubs around Dublin, like Slattery's of Capel Street, the Tradition Club. And, you know, we started doing little solo gigs and this was all just leading up to before the Bothy Band.
And what was the impulse behind Scarra Brae in particular, the first band? What was it that, you know, why did you get together to do that, do you think? And what other music would have influenced that?
Micheál and every summer in Ranafast, we stayed in different houses, and there would be, you know, Micheál became friends with people from Dahi Sproul, Jim McCluskey. There were a whole bunch of friends that we made around that time. And we just sang for the pure love of it around the back of the college. And it was everything from those songs that were in a little songbook that people were taught from Aberoran you know, Viahaninye, Behordit, Lorching Eilig, Na Kioli, Enuang Eilig, and Thomar Fad. But we'd be having a go at some Beatles songs or Pentangle. And Micheál and Dahi were very influenced by listening a lot guitar-wise to the likes of Bert Jansch and
Richard Thompson and those guys.
Who's the other guitarist in Pentanka? The great
John Renberg.
John Renberg, John of course. Renberg, yeah. John and Bert. And you know, out of that, somehow we got an offer from well, Scarabray, the whole thing came about initially. My mother and I saw an ad in the paper for the Kilkenny Beer Festival contest. And we were still at school at this point, and so we should enter for it. And it was a matter then of coming up with a name. And because Micheál and Dathi were studying archaeology, one of their subjects, Scarabray, it just had that Scottish connection or whatever. And there were all these heats, and Daddy drove us all around the country, and we finally got to the finals, and we came third. And Shea Healy had a programme on radio called All Kinds of Folk, and he actually recorded the finals, and he actually offered us a chance to do a couple of radio programmes with them.
Oh, right.
He said, this is a band, young band, that came third, but I think they should have come first or something like that. Right. And that kind of Gaelin then offering us to do a recording, which we did on a Sunday afternoon in Dublin.
And at that point, given how young you all were, did you do that kind of for the fun of it, or was it a kind of a career move?
Oh, there was no such thing as a career back then. We were just delighted at the thought of it. And it was a thrill, like, because by the time they came to take pictures of us for the cover, Myra and I were actually taken out of school, out of class, and crossed the road to the graveyard for the photos, which we thought looked a bit like, you know, the Beatles, you know, that album where they're all...
Your next choice is Tony McMahon. And of course, that's, you know, a lot of people don't think realise he was kind of in the original Bothy band, really, wasn't he? And it wasn't the Bothy band, but there was a bunch of people.
Schachter.
Yeah, they formed to play with him, is that right?
And Tony was a great influence at that time, particularly, well, in my life, in all of our lives, musically. He introduced me to such, you know, to great music, and kind of in a great way showed me what could be done with accompaniment. And he put me together with one of the first people. He had a series of programmes on RT called Casa Ceol, and he put me together with the likes of James Kelly. And I had never backed up a tune. You know, I knew a little bit. I kind of played a lot by ear. He was very instrumental in, you know.
And this is the concertina reel, and it's from an album with Noel Hill. Music there from Tony McMahon and Noel Hill, the choice of Trinity Gonal, who's with me in studio tonight. Some reels there. We were arguing over the names of them, and Trina doesn't know the names any more than anybody. I used to think bands were putting that on, you know, when they'd say before a set of tunes, this one's called, we don't know what it's called, and this one might be called, and nobody ever seems to know.
And people would argue, you know, over, like, there might be two players and say, no, I don't think it's called that at all. I think it's called such and such, you know. To me, it's just the sequence of chords, or, you know, once you get started, you kind of say, oh, yeah, no. I know what you mean.
Well, you were talking there now about what you've just said, and also about accompaniment there a moment ago, and learning accompaniment. And you just said there it's all just a series of chords. And of course, long before I knew you, I heard you playing on these records, and I thought, wow, listen to what's going on here. This is new. This is different and everything. So where do you think, Trina, your sense of playing chords and accompaniment, where did that come from? I mean, did you do, like, for the sake of argument, proper piano lessons and all that kind of stuff?
I did.
You did. So you knew your onions in that sense.
Poor Sister Dominic, God love her. She had to put up with me. I would bluff my way through sight reading a piece, because Micheál was about a year and a half ahead of me in terms in piano, and he was a great piano player. He won prizes and whatnot. If he had continued on, you know, very accomplished piano player before he picked up the guitar. But so I would pick up by ear and be bluffing my way through, you know, Beethoven's First Sonata, having watched and listened to him playing it. And so I had, with the result that I had all the wrong fingering.
Right.
That was, you know, I'd never have made a classical player. But for some reason, I love bass and I always listen to bass lines, and I kind of harmonise naturally without, I don't say naturally, but it comes to me naturally. Yeah. If I hear a line in my head or if I sing it, I can put a line underneath it. So I never had to really think about it. It's just a kind of an instant response to what I hear, how I hear, that I might be able to enhance the tune by playing little patterns.
And
it's
about
a series of patterns, yeah.
And what about then when, for instance, on Bathyban tracks, like the one I just played at the top of the programme, you're playing these patterns, but then there comes a point where the whole thing kicks off and it's you. It's you hitting those bass notes.
Yeah.
What, well, and nobody'd heard, I mean, I don't know, I'd never heard that before. And it was, it had some of the drama that you would get, or dynamics you would get in a rock band.
Well, I suppose we always would love to have had the tunes, you know, when in the Bathyban, I'm thinking back to when we kind of bringing it to an audience that was more our own age, that traditional music could be rocked out, like what we just heard there from, like there's an accordion and a concertina playing. To me, that's like,
sure,
it's as good as rock and roll.
Yeah.
And for the dancers, and that, you know, that charge is there.
Mm-hmm.
I always would try to play something each round a bit differently and keep building it.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I used to hit that low end on the clav and almost blow up speakers and festival PAs, you know, but I loved that.
Yeah.
I once got to meet an amazing bass player and hear him. Jaco Pastorius.
Did you meet him?
Yeah, in a club in Chapel Hill where I was living at the time. And he started, actually, he played the first note, which was a low A, I think. And he was about a half a block away, smoking, you know, a very cool cigar. And he just hit the A and it just reverberated. And he slowly made his way on stage. There was a kind of a garden area behind the club. It was a small club called the Cat's Cradle, and the band were already playing, you know, and the building actually almost shook.
He was an astonished musician.
He was a great,
Jaco
great
Pastorius,
player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did the Bothy band ever sit down and have a meeting about that? You know, this is
not we at need all.
No, but you know about the aesthetic or the sound. You know, we're gonna, if we do this, this is gonna, you know. Was there ever any plan in that?
No.
But I'd say the first time you did that, even the rest of the band must have looked over and went, "Whoa, we're onto something here."
Well, I loved it on the last the recording after hours
in Paris,
because actually to enhance the low end of the clav, which I was always happy to love to do, we had so many speakers going through the hall, and I actually had, it was PJ Curtis's two track, the speakers of it were under the clav, and it just gave it that extra low end, so I could hold back on the, you know, first round, second round of the tune, and then when you hit the low end, you could
bang,
nearly feel it,
yeah,
on the stage, you know.
And also, you know, that album cover, when I saw that, I thought you guys were the coolest band in the world on that street corner in Paris. That was something. That was something. Anyway, where did the instrument itself though come from? When did you start playing the clav, for instance? When did you think it would be an idea to put it into this context?
A week before we went to record for Scarabray, like at that point when we did the Kilkenny Beer Festival and the few programmes with Shea Healy, I had nothing to play. There were no such things as synths or, you know, very few keyboards. There were organs or farfises or, you know, or upright pianos, and but nothing really to play at the time. But we did. We took a trip to Dublin, and there was a little shop round the corner from the Gresham Hotel, and it was called Nordell Music. And we walked in there, and there was this gentleman sitting behind the counter, you know, and it was our father, Máirid, Micheál and Dathi and myself. And they were looking around at a few pianos, and again like that, there were just some organs. And the idea was to get something portable, hopefully, for me to play. And I wandered around the shop, saw nothing and that was even in our price range, never mind, that wasn't portable. But down at the back, I saw this. I walked down to the back of the shop, and on the floor, I saw this on its side with the reverse keys, like piano keys, the black keys with the white keys. And I saw a little switch, and I've deftly, you know, I turned it on and I played a note or two quietly. And your man was, Mr. Nordell, was looking down. And I played a little bit of a da-da-da-da-da-dee-da, bit of Bach. Wow, what is that sound? And in that moment, I kind of realised that I had heard this instrument before, but I didn't know what it was. And it was just there, you know, and Mr. Nordell came down and spoke to me and said, you played that very nice. I said, what is it? He said, I don't know. It had been a session instrument in Eamon Andrews' studios. And they kind of threw it out, and it was sitting down the back. And maybe it was all this was meant to be. I just said, is there any chance, you know, you could, is it for sale? He said, well, I don't know now, you know. And on the promise of the three programmes that we had with Shea Healy, All Kinds of Folk, my father wrote out, he said, how much do you think it would be worth? And I said, oh, it's probably £100 or something, or which seemed like a lot. I was chancing my arm, and I told him about the programmes. Daddy wrote a cheque for £33, which is a down payment on it, and we walked out of the shop with that. How fortunate was I? Because it was made by the inventor of it, a man called Ernest Zimmerman from for Hohner.
Right.
And he made only about 20 of them by hand. It was the earliest, the L model for the living room.
I hope you still have it, do you?
I still have it, but unfortunately it's... God. I need to find the right person to revive it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Just the stroke of fortune in that. You know, this was lying down the back of a shop and you could have missed it.
Yeah.
So easily, you know. Amazing. Now, your next musical choice is actually from the classical repertoire. Although a bit later on, some Mahler. I keep trying to turn people on to Mahler, you know, saying, well, you know, you mightn't think you like classical music, but you'll like Mahler. There's something kind of, he covers a lot of ground in different territories, you know?
Yeah.
So what have you chosen?
If you have it.
Yeah.
Kathleen Ferrier, another wonderful singer. There's something so, what a voice.
Yeah.
Just very haunting.
And this is from Kinder Totenlieder. Okay, here we go. Music there from Mahler. Kathleen Ferrier there with the Vienna Philharmonic. Bruno Walter conducting, or Walter. You can call him Walter if you want. Trina, great choice there. Do you listen to a lot of classical music, do you?
I do. I mightn't... just something might catch my ear. I love certain things that just kind of seep into you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I might wait and see, oh God, I wonder who that was, or whatever, you know.
It's funny, I think when you're, if if it's brought up it's in school, you know, music class and so on, I think you pick up this notion that with classical music, you're supposed to like all of it. You know, yeah. It's all good for you. And the reality is some of it you're going to love and some of it you're not going to like, and that's okay.
I mean, for some reason, I instantly loved and played a few Beethoven pieces through the years of, you know, the different grades. And, you know, I had a little bit of, I think it was Romeo and Juliet, Tchaikovsky to listen to for Intercertain, Leaving Cert. And but after that, kind of the same era that I got into, I would marry Debussy because he was a rebel, you know, musically. And I loved that fact because I found it really hard to study, you know, counterpoint and harmony, the written end of things. It was all straight. Listening or through my ear. And, you know, there were rules in harmony that you couldn't do two octaves in a row or two fifths. And this didn't make sense to me at all. But I think he broke those rules. And I loved him for that. And, like, at the same time, imagine what it was like in, you know, Paris. There was, alongside of, you know, Debussy and this, I was reading things, Maupassant, and...
It must have been incredible to hear someone like that at the time. I mean, it still sounds weird. Still sounds extraordinary. Shocking, transgressive, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But at the time, it must have been incredible, you know, back then.
Yeah.
Do you think you brought much of classical music into the traditional situation, Trainer? Because, you know, Bach and so on is not a million miles away from some of what fits with Irish music, you know?
I think so, in the very simplest way, maybe, just adding harmonies. And for some reason, you know, I still to this day, I just like the major or minor keys with not too many... bluesy or out there chords, but just a simple harmonic bass and counterpoint, and, you know, as something that my brother Michal had very much had a good bit under his fingers, you know. For me, it was more like patterns or just whatever I felt I would. Add to accompaniment of either songs or, and I'm sure the Beatles were an influence there.
Yeah.
As I would love and look forward to every album as it would come out and just hear that the harmonic.
Is the Beatles on colours. Your list? It's got to be on the list somewhere.
Definitely, yeah. Across the Universe as a track. Again, there's lovely orchestration and there's something terrible lonesome about that. But any number of, you know, from any album. From the word go.
Well, let's play across. Let's play Across the Universe now while we're at it. Across the Universe, the Beatles, the choice of Trainer the Gonal is with me tonight on Mystery Train, picking all the music. Well, I knew the Beatles would be in there. Now, one of the things, I guess, when you talked earlier on, as a lot of people do when they're guests on this programme, they have an older brother or an older sister who's got music and is introducing them to records all the time. And then you join this other family of a band. And then you have all these, presumably these people are bringing stuff into the mix as well. And to this day, I know young bands and they say, oh, I heard this because Jimmy was playing it in the van. It still goes on, this sharing of music in a band after the show, I guess, on long journeys and so on. And just while that was on, you were talking about Kevin Burke, who was a big fan of the band, the band.
And one night he introduced me, he just put the headphones, was sitting looking through his record collection in himself and Michal shared a house in Wicklow, and put the headphones on to me. And I was looking at the same night, switching tracks here, cheering music, Stevie Wonder, you know, Talking Book. And, like, I was amazed. He said, well, yeah, and he's playing the clavinet, which blew my mind as well, you know. And but he played the band. And from that moment on, I was hooked. And
what did you like about the band? Because they're not unique in America, but to get to that level of fame and be so well known for playing largely old old-time tunes, you know. A lot of it was playing old-time tunes.
Yeah, but I think the great thing was that individually they were all so different, and but they had that. They listened across.
Yeah.
They had that. They just worked together.
And you're right. They were very different. I mean,
very different. And like, you know, in a way, that was what brought me to America. Guy I was going with that at the time, we went to the Last Waltz here in Dublin, the movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, just couldn't believe it. And we just said, like, let's go. Let's go and see how many of these guys that we can see, or, you know, an adventure.
Yeah.
And to our delight, when we ended up, you know, stone broke and broken down in Nashville, through a friend, an Irish rock and roll guitar player, Philip Donnelly.
It could only be.
He was a friend of Victor's, and he brought us to this club that was opening that night, a rock and roll hotel. And earlier that day, we in Vanderbilt University, for free, we heard and saw an astonishing performance, Muddy Waters. I was standing about, you know, 5-6 feet away from him.
Wow.
Rick Danko Band. And this was all free. And it was just on the crest of a hill, you know, and you brought your blanket and your six pack, and you got all this great music.
So you're watching The Last Waltz in Dublin. You head to America to see who's around, and you see Muddy Waters.
Yeah.
Wow.
Unbelievable. And they all were heading back to that hotel that night. And Philip knew this, you know, and he introduced me to the Paul Butterfield band was there as
who
well.
Who played on the film as well.
Yeah, and he introduced me to him and said who I was and all this. And Paul Butterfield immediately started going, oh my God, you mean you're with that bunch of Irish hippies? And that was the old Haggie of Kilmeade album cover.
Yeah.
He said, myself and Garth listened to it all the time, you know. And this blew my mind he was another absolute, he was one of my heroes, Garth Hudson.
Who was from a classical background.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much so his parents were not happy about him joining the band at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought he was amazing, and, you know, on all the stuff he did and on that film, The Last Waltz, Paul Butterfield insisted on phoning him immediately and putting me on the phone. And he was in another state, and it was about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was dumbfounded. I didn't know what to say to him. Somebody said to me, get Paul to go to bed.
Wow. It's funny, you know, the thing about music, though, it really shrinks the universe quite quickly, doesn't it, once you're involved in it in any way?
It does,
I mean, you probably...
I didn't know how to say to him how much of a fan I was, and that the whole reason we were there was in part because we love their music and, you know...
We saw you in the cinema a fortnight ago.
Yeah.
And now we're here. That's amazing. Well, let's hear from the band then. It makes no difference. That's the band, the choice of Triona Ní Gonal, who's with me in studio tonight, picking all the music. We'll be right back after this. And this is Mystery Train on RTE Lyric FM, the Sunday night special, the night where we get somebody in to pick the music. Tonight, it's Triona Ní Gonal, a wonderful musician who has performed with some of her finest bands, from Skara Brae and the Bothy Band and Relativity and all the rest of it. Triona, great stuff so far. Thanks for picking these tunes. We'll just move on. We'll move straight into another tune. We just had the band there before the break with It Makes No Difference. You've got Joe Cocker down here. Joe Cocker.
This particular track has been a favourite of mine. I haven't heard it in years. There was something about his vocal on this. You know, I mean, he's screaming on a lot of stuff, and I get by with a little help from my fans. I mean, what a great, great singer, great guy. Sadly missed, but I saw a documentary there recently where one of the last gigs before he died, I think it was somewhere in Germany, and he was still giving it his all, you know, to the very end. But there's just something very beautiful about the the arrangement behind this and his treatment of this great song.
And that's Joe Cocker there in a version of the Jimmy Webb song, "The Moon's a Harsh Mistress." That was gorgeous stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Triana. Now, where do you want to go from here? Because there's a fine selection still to come. Rachmaninoff's Vespers is on the list. Now, tell me about the circumstances in which you might find yourself listening to that, because it's not every hour of the day is appropriate for hearing music like that, you know? It's not for while you're cooking, it's not for when you're doing the hoovering.
It's a
not,
great
you know,
one for the bath.
For the bath?
Yeah.
I mean, well, there you go. That's what I needed to know. It's good to have the circumstances, isn't it, you know? Yeah. Because it's sometimes there's certain types
light
of music.
Light a few candles with the bath and put it on the old cassette machine and away you go.
It's funny, I doubt that's what Rachmaninoff had in mind. but who knows? So Rachmaninoff's Vespers. And this, of course, would be religious music, spiritual music.
Yeah, but there's just something about the version that I have. I've had it on cassette for years and I begged a friend to find who the choir was. It's a Russian Orthodox choir, and it just there are some solo singers there, and just the low bass notes, and it goes all quiet for a while, and then suddenly it's like a wave of pure music, and it's for the soul.
Music there from Rachmaninoff from the Vespers, the choice of Triana Ní Gonal, who's with me in studio. It is beautiful.
Absolutely.
Meant for the church, better in the bath?
As good anywhere. Yeah,
It's amazing stuff. It's amazing stuff. Now, I notice that you've got Joni Mitchell on the list.
Yeah, and again, hard to pick the track.
This is a strange thing, and this is no criticism of your choices, but the amount of people who pick Joni Mitchell, she's been so influential, it's extraordinary. Yeah. People from all genres come in here on a Sunday night and it's almost like I'm watching to see did they pick Joni Mitchell. And nearly always they do. More so than pick Dylan or the Beatles or other people who you might think would be equally obvious, but it's always Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, just so original, so different. And LPs in those days, there was a feast of not just the music, but you could be looking at, you know, her as a painter. And, you know, Beatles album covers. You spent hours just reading the stuff for the looking at every corner, every inch of every LP you had on the floor or in your hand and listening to and playing over and over again till it skipped.
The one you've chosen tonight is from Courtney Spark.
Yeah.
And a song called Same Situation. Why'd you pick this one? Because as you say, you know, Joni's songs, there's a lot of them.
Yeah, a lot of them and a lot of great memories and associations and where you were. But there's something, again, the orchestration are just, it's different. You don't know where it's gone.
And that's the choice of Triana Ní Gonal there, music from Joni Mitchell. Same Situation from the album Court and Spark. I've noticed several times now, Triana, when you pick a piece of music, you'll say, that's a lovely arrangement, that's a lovely outro. You pay particular attention to that, don't you? That's kind of a...
I do, I love it. I mean, someday maybe with the few little bits and pieces that I've come up with myself, there are some sections that I'd love to hear orchestrated. It's such a thrill to play or to hear an orchestra behind, you know, and I might, one or two occasions, like I did, I sat in with Cherish the Ladies in the States a couple of times with arrangements of Irish songs and tunes. And it was lovely to hear all those, you know, bowed basses to your, in your right ear.
Bowed basses.
Yeah.
Well, listen, can I pick one of your tracks from The Keys Within now that we're talking about it?
Sure, you certainly
could. These could be, these could all be a big full orchestra behind this now at work.
I would have loved if I could have afforded that when I...
We'll arrange that. We know the orchestra in here. We'll sort that out. All right.
When I started to record these little pieces. On Micheál's instigation, he would say to me, you know, whenever I'd be in a different hall and sitting at a different gorgeous piano, a Steinway or a Yamaha, and just at a sound check, the piano would be so lovely that I'd just play something off the top of the head. And he'd say to me, what's that? You know, I said, I don't know, it's just something. He'd say, well, get busy and start putting these things down. And that was what led to my getting cracking with this album, which I began after we lost our eldest brother, great buddy, and the inspiration for this album initially was Eamon. And I went to my friends in Vermont and said, if I can get one piece anyway, I'd be happy. And after a few weeks, I got about 30 little bits and pieces. And it kept coming back year after year that I couldn't listen to them for a long time.
Really,
I'm a slow burner, you know, but eventually, little did I know that we'd lose Micheál 3 years later. But I saw it took a few years to, you know, in almost to them, I completed it about 6 years later.
What do you want me to play off this? And this is Snowy Crossroads is one I like, but this is whatever you want. You tell you what, you pick the track. Whatever you'd prefer to play.
Well, maybe there's the first track is
The Sun on the Water.
The Water is a kind of a moody one.
All right, well, let's play The Sun on the Water then. Hang on. This comes from an album called The Keys Within. Trina Ní Gonail is picking all the music tonight, although I picked that one because it's Trina herself from her album The Keys Within, The Sun on the Water, which is the opening track on the album. You're saying there, Trina, they're all off the top of the head.
Mostly.
Yeah.
And just I would keep playing little, as Micheál kind of worked in the same way, you keep playing these little patterns over and over until something sticks, including mistakes, what might be considered mistakes. A piece that I wrote for Night Noise called A Jig of Sorts springs to mind, where there was one bit and it's very hard to count out in time, and I was trying to get away from it, wasn't strictly in jig time, and this extra phrase or something, it just stuck. These were little pieces that kind of I'd play inspired by being able to play on a gorgeous piano at sound checks, and Micheál encouraged me to start recording them.
And where do you think?
But I wasn't sure that they were pieces.
Well, when music is improvised like that or off the top of the head, do you think about it at all where that comes from or how that happens? Is it a purely mechanical musical process, or is there something else going on there when that happens?
I think it just comes from inside of me, or just something that I think I like, or I like the sound of this, you know. And when I'm at home, a lot of the time I just use the old iPhone voice memo, and you know, there's going to be, I mightn't listen back to, but I'll hit record and I'll just play whatever comes out from under my fingers.
Yeah.
And I listen, maybe listen back to it. And I wish I was more versed in the technology and, you know, had a very smart kid on standby beside me that I could put something on a loop, or then immediately go without having to press the buttons, go and put another colour on top of it straight away. But there'll always be one little bit and I go, no, that wasn't exactly what I had in mind, you know. But with the little voice memos, you know, I might listen back 6 months later and say, oh, that was a nice little bit there. And it might stay in my, there's always background something going on in my head.
Yeah.
I won't tell you what's on now, but
all right. Okay, there's nobody listening anyway. You're all right,
but it'll surface,
okay,
either fully baked or to be continued.
Okay. The album, by the way, The Keys Within, is it's a beautiful record. I have this at home, and it's available from your website.
Yeah.
It's a limited edition type thing. And I'm just looking at it here now. The cover on the cover photography is also by you. Beautiful picture. It's where was that taken? Is that Donegal?
That's Ranafast, and it's a reflection of the clouds on the water, and there were three little ducks making their way very in close formation, and for some reason I, at that moment, thought of my mother and Micheál and Eamon, so I quickly snapped a few shots.
Beautiful picture.
Thanks.
I tell you, these people, we all have the same story. These people are never far from us, are they?
No, they're not.
Not at all.
They
seem particularly present with you, actually, because I'm just realising you mentioned Micheál a lot, you know. Why wouldn't you, of course? But not only your brother, but you know, being in the band as well. You know,
like he was
part of the gang.
A great friend, my best buddy. We didn't have to, we communicated on that other level, you know, on stage, I can remember so many times, and he'd be a good distance away from me, like a grand piano is, it can be 9 foot or 11 foot, and he's way on the other side of the stage, but with our eyes we'd communicate and know, and there might be one tiny little slip or something, and yet he'd, you know, we'd have this conversation.
I think we should play something by Micheál, actually, shouldn't we?
Really? Yeah, absolutely.
What do you, you know, you choose. You can play whatever you want.
Again, this morning I spent, I had a hard time choosing which one of his original compositions, because he wrote some incredible music in the years. I played with him in Night Noise, original music, and all the parts, and I chose one from, I think it originally was on the second album, Something of Time, it's called, but it's the one in your hand there, John, track 11. Hourglass. And again, he's written every note.
And that's Micheál O'Donnell there, and Paddy Glacken from an album called Reprise, and Breach One, and before that from an album called Night Noise. From Night Noise, we had the track Hourglass. The album was on Windham Hill, wasn't it? Windham Hill was the label. Trina Nigonal is with me in studio.
Yeah.
Windham Hill. Gorgeous music, Trina. Trina Nigonal is with me tonight in studio, picking all the music. We better plough on. I'm looking at the clock.
Yeah.
Now, there's a name here, Dárach O'Cahan. Now, when it comes to traditional singing, I am convinced he is the master.
He's the business.
Unbelievable.
He's the man. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And this particular song, which I hope you can find, Liam O'Reilly.
Yeah, I got it here. Yeah. Oh. Mistakes and all, Bob doesn't care.
Ah, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's very real, isn't
it? It is. But it's the strange thing about that, that's from an album from 1985, which Dylan fans would look back on and think, not his finest period. And that's not indicative at all of the record. That's the last track.
That's the last track.
And that
became my favourite track of all.
I mean, and it sounds like the one that he hung around at the end of the session and just knocked out that song.
Yeah, he maybe wrote it 10 minutes before, you know, and he's reading the words himself.
Yeah, because the rest of it's kind of, it's 1980s sound off it on the rest of the record. Yeah, so there you go. Bob Dylan from Empire Burlesque, a song called Dark Eyes, and before that, Liam O'Reilly, sung by Dárach O'Cahan. This next track we're going to play that you've chosen, it comes from an album called Trio, Dolly Parton, Emmylou Harris and Linda Ronstadt. And I suspect these are all people through the years now, because you spent a lot of time in America. And I know, for instance, Alton have a connection with Dolly, and, you know, Emmylou has a connection with quite a few people here. So you would have met all these people, I'd imagine.
Yeah, in the early 80s, when I was hanging around Chapel Hill in North Carolina, there was a friend there from another record company, a guy called Barry Poss with Sugar Hill Records. And he kept saying to me, because he had heard me singing a couple of my own songs with Touchstone, And there was a song, a particular song called Song in F, and another one called White Snow, that he said, I can hear Emmylou singing one of those songs, you know. And I discarded the notion. Mm. But a friend of his turned out to be recording or producing the first album, the trio. And they were at the listening stage where, you know, they're listening to 20,000 cassettes.
This being Nashville, it would be 20,000,
From all over the world, singers, songwriters. And Barry personally flew up to meet John Starling, I think was his name. He had a club in Virginia, Bethesda, Maryland, and with my songs under his oxter, and he brought it in. And at that point, Linda recognized my name, or she had heard stuff that I'd done, heard the Bothy Band, and was a fan, was introduced to us.
By the way, is it true Bob Dylan turned up looking for Bothy Band records? And
at some stage, but we heard that in passing.
I'm sure it's true. Anyway, sorry I interrupted you there.
Not at all. So
Linda was aware.
So Linda said, let's have a listen to this. And they picked those two songs, or they'd have a go at one or the other of them. And to my surprise and delight, they flew me out to LA to record. It's called In a Deep Sleep. Mm-hmm. And I got to play to back it. They got me a real clavichord for the studio, which was a George Massenburg studio. And I got to play with David Lindley and Albert Lee.
Wow.
And unfortunately, though, it didn't make the cut, as they say. It didn't go make it to the first recording.
Which is no small matter when an album like that sells many millions.
True, but you know, I wondered, was it something in my playing that went awry?
No.
But to my delight, about a year ago, I got a call from her manager, or the person who, because of Linda's tragic ill health and Parkinson's, they're not able to do any more recordings, the three ladies.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they decided to package it into a special collection, the trio, the collection, and using the all of the unreleased material.
Great. So 30 years and later, it appears.
30 odd years later, my song made it on there, and I hadn't even heard it myself.
Right.
So I was delighted.
And now our. Is this just Linda, or is Dolly and Emmylou on this as well?
Emmylou is singing harmony with her. Dolly isn't on this particular track, but they're outtakes and previously unreleased.
Great
tracks.
Stuff. Here we go. In a Deep Sleep, a song composed by Triona Ní Gonal. She's also playing on it there, along with Emmylou Harris and Linda Ronstadt, from the album Trio, which also features, that's the complete trio collection, which also features Dolly Parton, Emmylou, and Linda Ronstadt. Triona, have you any gigs coming up that you should be talking about? Because I didn't realise this, you're only just back from Japan. So it doesn't stop. This keeps on going.
Not as busy as I used to be in the last couple of years, but I'm looking forward to playing up in Skuldjeveri in Gdor at Christmas. Well, the end of December, the 29th and the 30th.
Yeah.
Playing with Noel Hill. Uh-huh. Noel and I got together just, it kind of grew out of just a bit of a session that we had a year or two back up in Iggy's and Kincastle, and we thrashed out a few tunes, a few sets and a few songs, and we did a gig sometime early last year on a very rainy night down in Milltown Malby, And we just kind of clicked, and we had great fun. And he asked me, would I be up for playing with him up at the what used to be the Frankie Kennedy.
And will you play the clav or the piano, or what will you play?
I have my own keyboard. It's a Yamaha.
That can do anything you want.
Mostly piano settings and the odd drone here and there, you know. But
I think you should take up the Hammond organ. That's what you should do. That'd be something.
If I could get somebody to, you know, turn the dials and do all the technical end of it.
So that's the 29th and 30th?
29th and 30th.
Of December in Gidor.
29th I'm playing with Noel, and on the 30th I'm doing a little solo slot before Alton.
Oh, right.
And that's about it for now.
Well, listen, thanks a million, Trainer, for bringing in all the music.
Not at all.
Really, real pleasure talking to you as ever. And I love
my
the tunes.
Too.
You threw me a real curveball with that Dylan track in particular. I'd say even Dylan fans would be going, "What would she get that one from?" But there it is. And we've talked a lot inevitably tonight because of your family and the musical heritage of your family. We talk quite a bit about family. And your sister Myrid, who was with you in Skara Brae, and I've often heard you sing together in various situations. She features on this track that you're going to play as the final track tonight. And we mentioned John Renbourn, funny enough, at the very top of the programme. It's amazing how influential all those English folk groups were on the Irish scene when you think about it.
True.
But this is a John Renbourn set. He arranged everything on this.
Apparently he wrote all the parts for the voice squad, and Myrid was especially picked out for the female voice.
Yeah.
And there's something lovely about it, and I'd have a hard time if I were to go elsewhere looking for favourite tracks of mine, of Myrid's, you know.
Trina, thanks for coming in, and I greatly appreciate it, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks a million.
Praise to the moon, bright queen of the sky.
You've been listening to a podcast of Mystery Train with John Kelly. Mystery Train hits the rails every Sunday to Thursday at 7 p.m. on 96 to 99 RTE Lyric FM.